Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. Good to be here with you. And I want to give a shout out to all our friends of the show. I had a guess that we were going to do some really interesting conversation that we'll have to wait for a couple of weeks because he just woke up this morning with a swollen eye and had to go to the hospital that his eye was some kind of trouble. So we are going to do a solo cast or a Paul and Charlie cast on what I am titling, this is going to be fun, I'm Done with Growing.
What?
On today's podcast, I plan to be perhaps just a bit controversial by challenging one of our society's prime objectives, personal growth. In this, there may be a follow-up to the show, or this, in truth, this may be a follow-up to the show that we did with my son a while back on the tension between personal improvement and personal contentment. I guess my question is this. Does there ever come a time in life when you are done growing? Do you ever get to arrive? Is that ever possible? You get to arrive and be done with this exhausting effort to be what is constantly hammered on us to be the best you can be. You know, it's like, geez, you know, I don't even know what the worst of me I can be is. And I'm going to blame Neil Gaiman on this because Neil Gaiman, famous author, wrote this in a poem titled After Silence. And let me quote Neil. And somebody has to say that we never need to grow forever, that we, like trees, can reach our full growth and mature in wisdom and in time, and that we can be enough of us. Who'll whisper it? We're done. We grew enough.
Oh, boy. That's them's fighting words.
They are, aren't they? Is it, you know, in our culture, those are fighting words because
yeah.
We, you know, because personal growth and getting better is everything.
I'm growing till it's time to go, until they come and cut me down. I mean, that's the old idea. As they're loading up the box, you're still growing.
Why?
I don't know, but that's
that's what everybody's told you. I don't know why.
It's just what you do.
Yeah, it's like we were in Europe, and my wife ordered a decaf coffee, and the barista said, "Why?"
Well, I think because we feel that's it's a limited time here, so I got to accomplish everything. Famously, Einstein was supposedly working on, you know, he was always trying to come up with the theory of everything, the grand unification theory that would unite all the different principles. And literally on his deathbed, he was sketching notes. Like, I got a few more thoughts here before I go.
Is that personal growth, or is that his personal muse and his personal drive that he is just driven to do that? That is part of his psyche, that he can't help but do that. That's different than these personal growth classes that people give, that you need to, you know, set all these plans. You know, Einstein didn't have personal growth plans.
No.
He didn't set out goals. Okay, I'm going to, you know, solve the mystery of life. He just was compelled by it.
But I think we're all compelled to accomplish as much as we can in the time allotted. And as you get older, I got to believe the time feels shorter. So you can either say, the heck with it, I'm done growing, I'm done doing, or no, I got to accelerate. I only got a little bit of time left.
Urgency. I guess. But, you know, see, Neil Gaiman struck a chord with me that has been ringing in my ears for some time now. I read this poem, well, just a few weeks ago, but it continues.
It's a powerful poem.
It continues to haunt me, and that our obsession with growth comes almost from an unhealthy dissatisfaction with ourselves.
Yeah,
and that is not good. That's not
bigger,
good.
Better, richer, handsomer,
yeah.
Taller, faster.
Yeah, and there's not a lot I'm going to be able to do about taller and handsomer. You know, so why do I have to be the best Charlie I can be? Why can't I be just Charlie? Why can't I be just who I am?
That's what I experienced growing up as a kid. That was the Midwestern ethic. At some point, you settle. Okay, so it's not the best job, but it's a good job. It's not the best house, but it's a good house. Not the best wife, but she'll do. You sort of settle, and that sort of, I think, accepts that there is no more. And then there is the people who came to California, the other ones who said, no, I'm always going to be what's over the next hill. How can I be better at my... You're the one that tells me every year you get together for how many years now, and you sit and try and talk about how you're going to be better partners in the coming year.
Notice the silence. Yeah. got me with that one. But you know, there's something... There's such a negative connotation to the noun settle. And settling means... It connotes... This sort of giving up,
yeah,
and I don't think it's a giving up. I look at this as a more giving in to reality and accepting who I am and being contented with who I am, and at the same time, as we'll talk about later, when there's opportunities for change and opportunities for improvement, I'm certainly going to seek those and certainly going to take up on those. But my objective is not to set all these annual goals and annual objectives so I can be a better person. My wife and I, we do it for sanity. This is not so we can, you know, get down on a piece of paper that we're getting better and that we have a better this and we're measuring exactly what's happening. We're just doing it for sanity. How can we live a happier life? How can we be happier together? Is there anything that each of us is doing that is impeding that contentment? And or we also review what are we doing that really does expand our contentment. So we take a look at that as well. And it's just about...
You don't have to justify to me, but it sounds like to Neil, you'd have to justify it. He'd say, well, you're done. The marriage, you got a marriage, grown.
Notice what he said, and I'll come to it. You're getting a little ahead of me right here. But notice what he said, and I would put, he says, we like trees can reach our full growth, but we still mature in wisdom and time. Trees may not be growing taller, but they're growing thicker and wider, and you know there's maturity to this tree, and this tree as it ages in beauty and whatever its purpose happens to be.
Because I don't know, do trees age? Do they mature, or do they just reach their potential height and stop? And then the tree from that moment on. The other side of it is, once you stop growing, can you stay in that place, or do you start dying?
That's a good question. Let's hold on to that one for just a bit, because I think that's good. I want to go another little different direction here. And that was when I was saying that, why do I have to be the best Charlie I can be? Why can't I just be Charlie? I heard an interview with B.B. King some time ago, and I really like what he had to say. He was talking to up-and-coming blues guitarists. Mm-hmm. And B.B. King said, quit trying to be the best one. Just try to be a good one.
Mm.
You know, no, see, it doesn't mean that they're not growing, they're not improving, but they're not anal about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not ridiculously encumbered by trying to say, my name is the best. And
would Tiger Woods agree with that? Would your son agree with that? Would the baseball team that he plays for, the San Diego Padres, agree with that? Just be a good catcher. Don't be the best catcher.
Honestly, I would hope so. I would like to see him, you know, not worry about being the number one or the best catcher in which, you know, he has a really good shot at defensively being the best catcher in baseball. But he wants to be a good catcher, and he wants to be good for his pitchers. You know, he loves his pitchers, and he loves the relationship for his pitchers, and he wants his pitchers to be the best pitchers they can be. Now he's not so worried about being the best catcher as he is worried about, concerned with, or devoted to helping make his pitchers the best pitchers they can be.
So is what you and the poet object to this idea of obsessing over something, of just relax. You know, it'll happen.
I think you just nailed it. I think it is. I think that's really what I'm talking against, is this obsession with personal growth and the personal growth self-help business. You know, our friend Terry Hershey frequently encourages his readers to be comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah.
And yet many of us live in this hyper-growth culture that seems to insist that we are always seeking ultra-high performance.
You're supposed to shed your skin like a lizard as it grows, like a snake. You know, you outgrow your skin. You need to grow a new skin to accommodate the new, bigger, better you.
Yeah, but I'm not a snake. I mean, some people may think I am. No, not really. I don't fit that category.
But I'm just saying, you're saying comfortable.
Let me read this to you.
All
this
right.
was something I read. I picked up a book that my wife Pam was given, and it was sitting on the counter, and I picked it up, and I read the back cover. Let me read the back cover to you. And the last little paragraph on the back cover
All right.
of this book. And I won't give the title or the author since I'm going to speak against it. Don't buy this book! And so here's what's stated. Happiness and success are possible if you live consciously with a strong sense of purpose and make technology work for you, not the other way around. Doing that isn't as hard as it sounds. It's about doing little things every day that build good habits, greater productivity, and a more fulfilling life. Read this book to unlock new levels of contentment, possibility, and passion. Read this book to be the ideal you.
That you just said what 99% of the consultants and authors who come through this studio say. This is the new ideal.
Yeah, I could have, you know, as I was thinking about it, as I was writing up this podcast, I was thinking, damn, you know, I could have written this book 20 years ago. That would have been
all
right
the things you talk about in one way, shape, or form. Every consultant that comes through here, every author comes through here, certainly all the self-help guides that are endlessly filled with, all say the same thing. And the key words in there are every day, always, constantly. You threw some words like that. Life's a journey. You never get it. What you're saying, if I'm a tree and I grow up, then the journey's over. No, it's a journey. There is no destination. We're always climbing. We're always striving. We're always reaching. We're always growing. We're always going. We never stop. You stop,
you know,
you die.
I think you can be less obsessive about it.
I think that's what you're getting at. If it isn't, if I'm trying to focus on, you said something else a long time ago, the guy playing the notes of somebody, some pianist, somebody, jazz guy or something, I've forgotten who, but it was about...
Robert Capon said that we're more concerned about making flubs than making music.
Yes. Perfect. So we're so focused, we can't just let it flow. We can't just let it happen. We're forcing it. We're pushing it.
Well, let's look at that. Let's look at that paragraph and kind of break it down
okay.
just a little bit.
All right,
and,
the one that you don't like.
The one that I don't like, and because I, you know, because
that's every book. Book that comes in here.
Yeah, just reading that piece is exhausting. You know, because first of all, it says happiness and success are possible. Well, what does that assume?
You ain't there yet.
That you don't have happiness and success. How, you know, holy cow.
It's possible, though. See, that's the hope. It is possible.
It is possible, but...
You don't have it now. You got to read this book first.
and you are... if you live consciously with a strong sense of purpose, well, that assumes that a good life is only possible if you're striving for it, if that is your intention.
Yeah,
and
that's a good point. Like goodness doesn't happen on its own. It's something you have to strive for. You have to be conscious about.
Do you think our parents were conscious of that?
No, not we're conscious.
No,
this whole thing would sound foreign to my dad or my grandfather.
Yeah, and were they discontented people? I mean, you know, as discontented as, you know, as you're going to be in life, you know, there are discontented
our
times.
Our whole generation, the baby boom, is the antithesis of our parents. The last thing we want to be is our parents. So we are going to be different. We are going to be the perfect. We are the ones that read Dr. Spock and all these baby books to raise the perfect children. We're going to have the perfect old age. We're going to perfect all these stages of life that nobody ever has before.
Yeah, I guess. You know, it drives me nuts. You know, more on this quote. It says, to build good habits for greater productivity and a more fulfilling life. That's assuming I'm not productive and I don't have a fulfilling life.
And that productive, notice how they tie the two together, more productivity and a more fulfilling life. So you can't have a more fulfilling life if you're not more productive. Those two are tied together. One leads to the other. Productivity leads to happiness.
You know, it reminds me of...
Workers of the World Unite, be happy in your work here.
It reminds me of a story by... you know, a guest that we had some time back, Daniel Klein.
Yes.
The author of Travels with Epicurus. And,
right.
And he, somewhere in the beginning of his book, he talks about this old man sitting on a rock watching a sunset, enjoying the sunset,
mm-hmm.
and sipping it's not a glass, whatever they sip of ouzo, you know, it's that little
shot glass kind of thing.
Little
yeah,
shot
right.
glass kind
right.
of thing. That he's sitting there sipping ouzo and... a rich American Italian comes up and looks at him, and behind this old man is this sort of decrepit field of olive trees. And he says, and you know, it's not taken care of, it's all sort of messed up. And,
right.
And he looks at the old man and he says, who owns that?
This mess.
Yeah, this mess that has great potential. And he says, well, I do. And he says, well, don't you know that if you were to clean it up and hire some workers and plant manure and prune and do yeah. all that harvest, that you know, olive oil is extremely profitable, and you could become very rich. And he said, well, what would I do then? And he says, well, you could hire servants and hire people that could do all of this for you. And you wouldn't have to worry about doing all
wouldn't
of this.
Wouldn't have to work.
And he says, what could I do? What would happen then? And he said, you could do anything you want to do. And he says, you mean like sitting on a rock, sipping ouzo, watching the sunset?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's you know, what's the...
He's already there. You want him to go run around and do all these things so he can get back to where he started.
And he's already there.
He's already there.
He's and so again in Neil's, you know, we focused on the first and last part of Neil Gaiman's that we don't need to grow forever, and that who's going to whisper we're done, we grew enough. But he talks about we like trees can reach our full growth and then mature in wisdom and time. So a question I want to ask, is there a difference between maturity and growth?
According to the poem, it sounds like there is, but I guess I kind of think of them as parallels. Growth is something measurable. Let's put it that way. Something measurable. I was here, and now I'm here. I'm smarter. I'm better at the piano. I'm faster. I'm taller. I'm something. Maturity implies...
Why do you keep going to taller? Just because you're 6 foot something and I'm 5 foot something.
I just wanted to get that in here. I'm proud of that fact. I don't know about maturity. Maturity seems to be what people our age love to suddenly find value in. Old wine, slowly maturing. Somehow it's getting better just by sitting there. I don't know.
I look at it and I think there's a big difference.
I never saw any value in maturity my whole life. Maturity is what my father's generation wanted.
Yeah, see, I see tremendous value in it.
Maturity seems old and tired and more. Yeah, I want to be, our whole generation, we're the baby boom. I dress like I'm still in college. We want to look like we're still in college. I'm still young, I'm vital, I'm everything. Mature is not a word that sounds appealing to most baby boomers. I want to be mature.
That's terribly unfortunate. That's almost scary because I think maturity is the culmination of... I view maturity and wisdom almost synonymously. And that as I mature, I'm becoming wiser and understanding life and the purpose of life better. And that's why I look at the difference of this way, is that maturity can occur naturally if you're paying attention to life. If you're paying attention to what life is, what's going on in your life and the life around you, you gain wisdom and you mature and you get better and you have a more mature understanding. That's why you've heard me say several times that a lot of people say, the older I get, the less I know. And I say, the older I get, the more I know. But the less I know for sure.
Yeah. Well,
the less I know for sure. And that is...
I believe that.
See, that's a mature value
that
you cannot have when you're young.
But I think we are the first Peter Pan generation to come along, which is... My parents looked forward to getting older because they would be treated with respect. They would have position. They would have rank in the community. They would...
Oh, that was because of their generation, that the generation that preceded them.
Yeah,
that's what they got, and
right. So there wasn't you weren't afraid of... I'm not talking about really old, but you weren't afraid of growing up and being older. You sort of aspired to. You started wearing the suit and tie when you were younger. You wanted to be that executive. You wanted to be the wise one in the room. All of that. I think baby boomers threw all that out. We don't respect wisdom, first of all, and authority. It's, what do you know? You don't know any more than I know. I think we live in a world where that values youth and values playfulness and all the other qualities that come with
youth. And we started, and the baby boomers started that.
Yes.
You know, we were the incipient
Peter Pan generation,
cause of that.
Never going to grow up.
Yeah.
Never get Peter Pan, right? The Peter Pan has the kids grow up and Peter Pan says, "You left me, you know. Come on back. Be kids again."
Yeah. Now on this, though, that as I advocate that maturity can happen naturally if you're paying attention, but personal growth doesn't happen naturally. It can if you're paying attention. It can. But in our hyper-vigilant emphasis on personal growth, it is seems to require so much freaking effort, like planning and measuring and comparing and obtaining. And
here's the way I look at personal growth. You can grow like a weed in any direction, that wherever there's a rock, you're blocked, and then you try and go around it or whatever. Or it can be like the Japanese approach to bonsais, very carefully cultivating, getting the plant to grow in a certain direction that takes forever to guide it and trim it and adjust it and monitor it. I don't think most Americans want to grow like that. Baby boomers don't. We just grow like weeds. Wherever the river flows, wherever the crack is, we pop up through it. And then in the end,
we're not long-termers.
No.
We're not long-termers. We're instant gratification.
Yes.
Instant gratification is very important, and that's why this self-help movement is a lot about about immediate gratification.
Exactly.
You know, and now it talks about long-term satisfaction, long-term contentment, but that you can in a year, if you follow my daily planner, if you follow my growth pattern, if you follow my growth teachings.
5 steps, 4 tips, 5 ways to do this.
And your life is going to be completely better. So, okay, let's take that. Let's take Mr. What's-His-Name who wrote the book and say, I can read this book and be the ideal me. All right.
In 5 minutes.
I don't care if it's 5 years. Okay, but I read this book and I become the ideal me, then have I arrived? I mean, if I'm the ideal me, then I've grown. I'm done.
No, because Maslow says you can always go to the higher level.
No, unless you reach a higher level.
Well, but that's so far off. And we're always climbing. We're always achieving. We're always reaching for the stars.
I don't think so. I think when I take a look at Maslow's hierarchy, I think enlightenment is very achievable. I think there's always levels of enlightenment and getting better at it. But I think there is. I think it's a very achievable.
So can you get to the summit, or is the summit always out of reach, and is that a good thing? It always means you're striving, you're reaching, you're never satisfied, you're always looking for more. Or is that the source of our discontent?
See, I think it's that, you know, when I go to foreign countries, I don't get this.
I know you talk about it.
I don't get this, that I've got to reach the summit, and then when I reach that summit, I just look to, because I achieved a certain height, I can now see a mountain.
There's another one behind it, and I can climb that one.
That I can continue to do it. I don't see that. I see them, and it's not that I don't see self-improvement in other countries, but I just don't see this obsession. Maybe that is my deal with this, is my obsession. And I'm wondering, Paul,
my mom and dad never once read a self-help book. Not once.
You what?
My mom and dad, or my grandmother and grandfather, never once read a self-help book.
Well,
there were none.
Well, Napoleon Hill.
Yeah, that's about it. Or Norman Vincent Peale. I mean, those were radically. Yeah. They stood out because they were so unusual.
Yeah. I want to take us a little bit, another direction. Why don't we take a quick break? And we'll come back with my next question for you. This is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. Today I'm having a discussion with producer Paul. And the title of the podcast is "I'm Done Growing," and we're talking about personal growth, and
the obsession for it.
That's what I was just going to say. As we're talking, it seemed that we're looking at not so much at personal growth is anything wrong with that, but it is this obsessive, compulsive. Addiction almost to personal growth. As a matter of fact, my wife talked me into attending this seminar, and so I went to a seminar, and it was like 3 days, and she really talked me into it, said this is it, and I'm not going to name it's a very well known super hyper self-improvement guru, and it's not Tony Robbins, but he's a guy that's kind of reaching that
breakthroughs,
that thing.
New summits,
and it was freaking bananas. This guy was running and jumping on the stage and clapping and yelling, and people were clapping and yelling and jumping up and all and down, and all about self-improvement. And it's about how you can do this and how you can do that and how you can be the better you. And, they got coaching and they got books and they've got, they got so much product that it's unbelievable. And and I was exhausted after about an hour. I said, I don't know if I can take this.
You know what it is in our non-religious society? It's the new form of tent revivals. You've seen tent revivals. You're an evangelical.
I have never ever thought of that, but
that's
that
is
so true. So true. I mean, bring on the copperheads.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And you're screaming and you're speaking in tongues and things are coming out of you never saw before, and hallelujah.
Yeah, I don't, you know what I'm wondering, and here's my question that I hope is not true, but I'm wondering, I speak quite a bit of the second half of life, and I've, we've covered that subject quite a bit. Do you think this is a second half of life thing, a second half where we're more contented, where not so much the ego is sort of dismissed, and we don't need the ego fulfillment that we needed in the first half of life, and that we don't require that
I think some do and some
admiration.
Don't. I'll tell you the way I look at it, and especially after listening to your show a lot. I'm beginning to think that it's more a question of acceptance, that there is an end, that we are slowing down, that there are limitations. When you're young, there's no limitations. My grandson's 5. He has no limitations right now. He could be or do anything. Who knows? But as life goes on, limitations start setting in. I'm never going to be this height. I'm never going to be this good. I'm never going to be this handsome, whatever it is. And I think at some point, you either start to accept some of those limitations, which I'm sorry to say sounds like what my parents settled for, the Midwestern life. What was it, the Dylan Thomas poem? Rage against the dying light. You never accept it. And I think there are those. So I look at my own family and friends. Those who are the most content are those that have accepted some of those limitations. We are getting older. We are slowing down. Things are happening. Those that are the least happy are those that are, I hate the way I look. I hate the fact I can't do this. I'm miserable. I want to turn back the time. I want to go back to being 20 again here. So I think it's a question of, yes, there is change. The tree does grow. And if you don't accept those differences, look at the way we look at youth. Everybody's got to look young all the time, me included. We're all trying to do this. And so why can't we just accept the way we look? Why do we have to get hair transplants and facelifts? And why are we constantly trying to look like we used to look? Why are we not accepting the way we look today? I'm not saying, if you're fat or heavy or whatever. I know there's health reasons to do certain things, but our generation more than ever is obsessed with youth and unaccepting of aging.
And do you know that is really, really a strange American phenomenon? What the heck is that? Mm. Oh, that's somebody at my front door.
The angels are calling you here.
Yeah. I was in Africa. And I was speaking with a consultant, a woman who is from the Netherlands, and she's lived in Africa for past 10 or 12 years. She's lived in Ethiopia, mm-hmm. and currently lives in Kenya and is going to move to Senegal. And she said she was in a course that was talking about the oddities of various cultures. She gave 4 examples, and I can only recall 3. The first example was from Ethiopia, and it was the platelet people.
Yeah,
who put small plates and larger plates until they'll get
I've seen those pictures in National Geographic, and these women have these giant plates hanging in their lips here. It looks absolutely grotesque, and to them it's a sign of beauty.
It is a sign of beauty, and that is it. So it's a cultural oddity.
Right.
And then the second cultural oddity she pointed out is there's a tribe in Africa that's really funny that it's not far from Uganda, but where the men go naked. I mean, they will go into cities naked. They mostly hang around themselves, and they wear a little belt sash, except they cover their rear ends, not their front.
That's shocking, right?
But they think nothing of it.
Right.
They think nothing. But to us, it is like, you got to be kidding me,
right,
that you would do that. And then the fourth one, because I can't remember the third, was 70-year-old American women that are trying to look like they're 20.
Absolutely.
And we accept it, but in other cultures, it is bizarre. Why are you doing it? In Africa, for instance, an older age woman who's overweight, mm-hmm. is highly esteemed, because that means she's lived a good life.
Mm-hmm.
She's had plenty of food.
Oh, yeah,
she's lived well.
Exactly.
She's okay. And so she's a highly respected woman for being overweight.
Mm-hmm.
But, in the United States,
I think of my great-grandmother, who I got to know a little bit before she died. She was from Poland. And she was just this shriveled up little lady and wrapped in this babushka. And she looked like an alien to me. I was just horrified. Look, her face was all shriveled. And, she never took care of her face. She never put makeup on. She was a peasant. And she looked like a peasant. And she looked like the Wicked Witch to me when I was a little kid. We don't age gracefully. We don't look at each other. Those lines aren't valued. The hair loss isn't valued. The whatever changes happen to your body, we fight them.
You know, and that you know, that talk with that woman from from Netherlands, but really from Africa now, really impacted me, and it impacted me personally about, you know, as I'm balding, you know, don't worry about it. I'm heavier than I should be, but you know, I'm going to, you know, for health reasons, you know, I'm watching my diet.
Yeah, but I think weight has certain sense.
Am I going to start going to a gym and working out every day? No.
You were for a while. You felt that compulsion to do that.
Yeah, and then, you know, it lasted until things last like that with me.
Yeah.
Lasted about 3 years. But I'm satisfied with that, with the way I look.
Yeah.
And this is in fact the way I look, you know.
Well, we both have a gray beard, and many people say to me, sometimes even my wife, why don't you cut this off? You look younger. And I'm like, is that a good thing? I mean, I know that's our society values that, but I kind of like a gray beard. I don't know. It sort of says kind of wisdom to me or something here. I don't look at it and see it as a negative, but I know many people do and say, oh, you'd look so much younger if you cut that off.
Yeah, you would look younger. That's the whole thing. You look younger, but, you know, the fact is you're not younger.
Yeah, right. So why am I pretending? I have a very good friend of mine who's close to 70, and honest to God, he goes and gets his hair dyed all the time because it's got to look, and it looks so fake and phony. It's so obvious that it's dyed. But he thinks he's got a younger wife, and he somehow thinks this is what he needs to do to compete. He's still in business, and he still thinks this is what he's always been a good-looking guy, so this is important to him. And I think we strive so hard. You see so many women here in Orange County. We're obsessed with youth, particularly the women here in Orange County, plastic surgery and facelifts and all this kind of stuff.
Well, you know, you have those, and then you have the women, not trying to be necessarily youthful, but doing what they do, and I feel sorry. You know, what my wife has to do to put on makeup in the morning, and then she has to spend the same amount of time taking it off at night, and I'm just saying, my goodness, if I had to do that, you know.
We go through this with politicians all the time. You know, a female politician is held to a different standard than the male. Male can look, in the last election cycle, Bernie Sanders was great. He can look frumpy and dumpy, and that's okay. Hillary Clinton was constantly criticized every time she looked frumpy and dumpy or whatever. You know, that whether you like those people or not, just the fact that they're judged differently because one's a man.
Yeah,
one's
it's terrible.
A woman.
It's terrible the way women are judged. It just it's very frustrating to me.
But I think again, it goes to this core point of acceptance, of contentment, of recognizing you're in a different stage and you can't go back.
See, you're using a key noun here that has become very, very important in my vocabulary of late, and that is acceptance.
Yeah, and that is the hardest word in the world for me to accept is acceptance. When people say, just accept it.
It's becoming, you know, once you start trying to make a habit of it, it's becoming much, much easier for me.
Is it?
And oh, yes, you know, just accepting who I am, accepting situations, accepting
limitations,
accepting the way things are going on. I am much more contented as a result.
Yeah,
I genuinely accept. I know in our 12th step, you know, we talk about surrender, and surrender is a very difficult word. That means I'm giving up to the other side. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's what the literal meaning of surrender is, and giving up to the winners. Rather than, I always encourage people to use the word acceptance rather than surrender. You know, surrender to the fact that I'm an alcoholic rather than just, I accept it. It's easy. If I'm surrendering, then I'm always fighting it. You know, I'm always fighting because I'm always having to surrender daily, daily, daily. Once I accept that and that becomes a norm definition of who I am, then I'm kind of done with it.
My dad was good at accepting aging and lived a fulfilling, happy life, contented life till the day he died. My mother raged against the dying light. She fought everything. She didn't want to give up her job. She hated looking older. She hated everything that happened to her. She was just angry and bitter and unhappy the last 10 days. It was miserable because she was a very fun, happy person, but she wanted to stop and stay the way she was. She wanted to be Peter Pan, and I think that's the way most of us are these days.
I was thinking about, you know, the contented life and how there are times I still find myself wrestling. If I don't have appointments in a day, what am I going to do today?
Yeah, you talked about that before. I thought that was very insightful. Am I somebody if I don't have an appointment, if I don't have an agenda, if I don't have some... We have people come in here and say, after a couple months of doing these shows as a host, they said, "So what do you think?" He said, "This is amazing." What? It's the only hour of my day that I don't have an agenda. I'm willing to just slow down and listen and talk and wander and explore.
And this is the only hour of my day I do have an agenda.
Yeah, you come in more of an agenda. But I'm just saying, for a lot of people, they don't have any time set aside to just be. Terry talks about
you know,
that all the time.
Yeah, and I, boy, Paul, you know, I take a look at my life right now, and I'm post-retirement, which I, you know, I kind of, I only use that definitionally so people can understand my age, but I don't, I'm totally against retirement, and, you know, I think it's a silly idea. But my life is full.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I work with Wells of Life, and in Wells of Life, you know, I'm in charge of all operations in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've got coming on 11 people that are there and drilling, you know.
Making a big difference.
You know, we've got 400 wells and we're repairing wells and we're teaching people sanitation.
But that opportunity only presented itself when you sort of let go and just started talking to people.
Okay, so I have that. I have the next chapter where I, you know, mm-hmm. I blog weekly, I podcast weekly.
Mm-hmm.
That is that, and I get to, as I'll, well, I won't see a game tonight, but I'll see him tonight. I get to watch my son playing professional baseball, and
it's a full
life. And yet, in this process, Paul, I am forever learning and improving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so am I talking against what I'm saying? But
you're kind of dancing on both sides of it here, yeah.
Well, but
you're not obsessed with it.
But improvement, it is not something I'm driven by.
That's the key.
It is something that occurs naturally by paying attention and saying, I'm not managing these people. I've, you know, can manage these people better. I can write better blogs. I can do better podcasts. I study, you know, because I want to present a better product, but not that I'm just overwhelmed. It's not I'm overconsumed with me. It's
well, let me
less
give you another one. Maybe this will lead you out here, but success. You know, Americans are obsessed with success too. We're obsessed with beauty. We're obsessed with growth and change, and especially baby boomers and success. None of us, however, ever define what success is. And the point I was going to make is success something that just happens over time, that you only measure it when you look backwards, or is success something that you're obsessed with trying to reach? Was the time to decide whether or not you lived a good life at the end and you look back, or is it something that you're obsessing about making sure that you achieve along the way?
I think part of a response to that, I'm not going to say an answer to that, but a response to that, we did on a show a couple of weeks ago with Terry, and we talked about a Mary Oliver poem,
mm-hmm.
which she said, instructions for living a life
mm-hmm.
is pay attention, be astonished, and tell someone. And the pay attention really, really, that is the one admonition that really, really struck me.
But what I don't hear in there is craft a plan, work your plan every day, refine your plan.
No.
Push. And yet, most of the people that come through here, it's all about success doesn't happen on its own. You got to push it. You got to fight for it. You got to get up earlier. You got to work harder. You got to have a plan.
Where is the joy of life in that? Where do you find joy in continually obsessing over these habits and and objectives and where is the contentment? I'm looking for contentment.
Yes.
You know, that's a word that's become very big for me. And
I think it's something most people feel they have, truthfully. I'm not sure I'm contented. I feel in some ways I'm contented, but in some ways I'm always told, but you got to want more. You got to lose weight. You got to make more money. You got to have a goal. You got to improve. You got to.
We got. And the priest in me is right now giving the
absolution
of the cross and giving you absolution over this.
I got it. I got it.
That you can't.
We're obsessed with I gottas. Things we got to do. I got to get up. I got to go. I got to keep zooming. Success. I always wonder about success. Is success something that you aim for, or success? When do you measure success? Do you measure it at the end, and we all compare who's got the most, or who did the most? Is success something that you measure in the moment? I feel successful. Is it measure it compared to others? Success is such an elusive thing, and yet it seems to be the most important thing in our life. To be successful, to have a successful life, successful marriage, successful
Paul,
career.
Why'd you do that? Just when I was thinking, concluding, because I've got to get to San Diego. You know, you.
I opened up a whole new door.
You opened up a whole new door, and I want to say, agree with you. What is success? And
when do you measure it?
Why does my life have to be measured? Since when did life have to be measured? Life has never had to be measured except in the last 20 or 30 years. Yep. People did not measure their life.
Always comparing it to others, always measuring
comparisons,
it.
Measurement.
By some standard in your own head or in some standard there. How much money have I got? How tall did I get? Whatever. You know, we're always measuring each other. Who's got the... Your son lives in a world filled with measurement. They measure him day to day.
Day to day, he's measured. Yes, day to day, and yet he is not any longer obsessed by it. That's what gave him the joy of baseball. That obsession with that, getting measured and trying to make everybody's goals, trying to please everybody, made
him
incredibly unhappy man.
Yeah,
anxiety filled.
Yeah, he talked about it.
And
right.
he's just let that go, and he's just going out there and doing the best he can, and trying to be a good man, trying to be a good ball player, trying to be a good teammate, and just enjoying this time of finding contentment. I think success. I would almost like to just lose that from our vocabulary.
I'd like to do another show on it sometime. I think that's opens up a whole nother. Because I think that striving for success, whatever that success means to you. Successful marriage, successful career, successful life. Whatever that obsession is that's driving us as Americans, we are success-driven more than other cultures. That is, I think, the source of our greatest discontentment, and particularly as we stop and try and measure it continually.
Yeah, well, you used the word that I would say is the response to it, and it is contentment.
Yeah.
It is learning to be content. It is. I think what I'm walking away from this discussion, because I came to it as a discussion. My two words that I'm coming away with is are acceptance and contentment.
Yes.
That I accept where I am. I accept the fact that I am. That I am fallible. That I have problems. That there are things that I can do better. And I want to do better with those, but I also accept that I have a good life. Mm-hmm. And I compare my life to when I want to. If forced to compare my life, I have a life most people would give anything to have.
Because and even if it isn't the life they would have, it's your life, and you're happy with it. You're content with it.
Exactly. And that has to do with accepting. So let's close her up, and I want to read O'Neill Gaiman again, just to close it.
It's a good poem.
So we can end with what we started. And Neil Gaiman writes in his poem After Silence, which is read, by the way, on Brain Pickings by his wife Amanda Palmer, and it's a quite good reading. And this is a piece of it, and it says. And somebody has to say that we never need to grow forever, that we, like trees, can reach our full growth and mature in wisdom and in time, and that can be enough of us. Who will whisper it? We're done. We grew enough.